Hello, everyone. This is Michael from Inspired Adventures again with episode 3 of our Meet Our Partner season on the podcast. And today, not only am I in Belize, but I'm sitting at the Belize Zoo and Tropical Education Center with Jamal Andruin-Bone, Conservation Director of the Zoo, and Jose Valdez, a zookeeper with extensive experience with jaguars. Jamal and Jose are with us today to talk about the unique role that the Belize Zoo plays in wildlife conservation, not only in Belize, but increasingly throughout the Western Hemisphere. We've had the pleasure of working with the zoo for years, both here in Belize as part of our Adventures program, in our virtual tour campaigns to bring the wonders of the zoo to learners of all ages. Today, we're going to learn about one of my favorite topics, jaguar conservation. So let's start off talking about the human-jaguar conflict program at the zoo, and specifically, how that program is related to our new partnership campaign that we're working on called the Habitats for Jags program. When I hear human-jaguar conflict program, I think of something that's really catastrophic, right? Okay, that's really going to be like a real problem. But this is something the zoo is not only leading efforts in Central America on, but has been doing for years. So, Jamal, why don't you just start off by telling me something about this program?
Sure, and thank you, Michael, for having us on the show today. So the Human-Jaguar Conflict Program has been running for over 20 years at this point. And I like that you mention how the current title, it kind of evokes some assumptions or just some initial thoughts and reactions. Human-Jaguar Conflict, it sounds very combative. And it is realistic, it does reflect the situation. But talking about language, I want to just note and both pay homage and also talk about the evolution of the program. So it was something that was developed and devised, dreamed up by the founder of the Belize Zoo, Sharon Matola, back in 2003. And at that time, it was called the Problem Jaguar Rehabilitation Program. And that we'll come back to that those words, Problem Jaguar, right? It was developed with the support of the Belize Forest Department, as well as support and buy-in, if you will, from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We'll talk about why in a minute with that as well. But the idea was to provide direct intervention for jaguars that suddenly find themselves at odds with communities, with farms, with villages. And increasingly, the response to those problem jaguars, I put in air quotes, was to deal with them lethally because they were perceived as a threat to life, to livelihood. In some cases, they were genuinely a threat. You know, their circumstances put them where they were dependent on livestock, domesticated animals that they traditionally wouldn't eat, but they are top predators and they need to eat just like we do. They need resources to survive, and those were the only ones that were available to them. And so while understandable, it was also a risk to, or you know, risk to assets for the folks that own those, risk to safety and comfort, you know, thinking the fear that they might be in their yard taking one of their pets, or, you know, the assumption that it might escalate to taking or harming a human being. And so the reaction, of course, was to deal with the jaguar lethally, to shoot or poison it, to remove that issue. And obviously this isn't sustainable. You know, as much as we try to give jaguars a fighting chance and, you know, promote coexistence, we can't just let them be this vulnerable, but also be a threat to themselves and others. So the zoo started to intervene with support from the Belizean government to remove those jaguars from those problematic situations. So not so much saying that the jaguar was the problem, but they were in a problematic situation and they needed to be assisted. And so that's how it started 20 plus years ago. And since then, we have intervened directly on behalf of over 25 individual jaguars all throughout the country, many of them unrelated or to our knowledge, you know, varying ages, varying levels of history with predation on livestock and domesticated animals, and also varying degrees of trauma, physical, mental, all you want to, any term you can take from that, which compounded or contributed to their shift from being a natural apex predator that avoids people to going into human-dominated landscapes in order to survive.
And as you were saying, you know, historically, things did not turn out well for these jaguars, right?
Correct.
Before the program, right? And you've run about 25 of them through. You know, what happens to a jaguar as it moves through the program? I mean, of these, you say you've rescued 25 jaguars. If you're just going to give a big picture of what, you know, where have they gone? What have they done? You know, what has been the second chance for most of these jaguars? Where are they at now?
So I can tell you about the vision before we get into specifics. Okay. You know, obviously the primary objective was save these jaguars from being killed. Then the secondary one was, okay, now we have them. What happens to them now, right? How can they be provided good quality of life and also somehow contribute to the furthering of their species. Since they're no longer in a wild situation, obviously they're no longer fulfilling that ecosystem role. They're not top dog anymore, top jaguar. They're in a zoo setting. So they've done one of many things. Initially, we had an avenue where they could be sent to accredited zoos in the U.S. as part of this Jaguar Species Survival Program that is headed up by the IUCN, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, to ensure that there was a genetically diverse captive population in accredited zoos in the U.S. So we had two jaguars that fulfilled that, and you know they did, as we hoped, they had multiple litters of Belizean American jaguars once they were found a mate. They had a tremendous impact on education, awareness, and even, you know, investment back into conservation programs focused on jaguars in Belize. So that was great. So that was one major track for them. The other one was just having them here and being able to rehabilitate them to a point where they could represent their species, engage the thousands of visitors we get at the zoo. And also, a third avenue was they can also contribute to ex situ or off-site research. You know, here we have these prime specimens with a lot of wild history who could be part of studies that you can't necessarily replicate with wild jaguars in a wild setting. So they have helped over time fit or inform these missing pieces of the puzzle when you're looking at a jaguar's life history. Everything from how much, you know, prey does a jaguar consume on a regular basis once it's made a significant kill? How does environment impact their stress and hormone levels? They've looked at how they interact with different sights, sounds. They've looked at acoustic studies. So they've still contributed to the survival of their species, even though they're not physically out there with their wild counterparts.
I see. So when we come to the zoo, okay, and we see the jaguars, which are up front, right? Okay, we see Martin, we see Window, okay? Those are actually jaguars which, for the most part, but not always, right, okay, are graduates of that program.
Correct.
Okay.
All the public-facing ones are, and how they get to that point is a very long and complex process, and it is only made possible through the commitment of our animal care and management team, which Jose, who's with me here today, is a critical part of. So he could tell you what happens behind the scenes to get them to that point where when you come and meet Martin or Lindo, they're interactive, they're super engaging and charismatic. They don't all come in like that. So right. Jose could probably help us walk through that process.
I'm going to come back to you in a minute, Jamal, and talk about another part of that program. But Jose, I got to start off by saying you have the job that I always wanted as a kid. Okay, I always wanted to work with the big cats. And ever since coming to the zoo, I feel like it's really been an opportunity for me to learn so much every trip to the zoo. And all of that is because of the efforts of the Jaguar zookeepers, all the zookeepers here, of course. So it is absolutely a privilege for me to be talking to you as well today about this. So I know there's a lot of jaguars out there, okay, that you've been interacting with. But just run us through kind of, you know, if these are jaguars which have been in conflict, okay, their opinion of humans is not very, very good at this point, okay, understandably. So how do you, as a zookeeper, start to work towards making it so that that jaguar can enter into a program of, for lack of a better word, rehabilitation, okay, or, you know, behavior modification or whatever the term is, and I'll let you tell me that, so...
Well, yeah, when they first arrived at the zoo, the first memories they've had or encounters with humans aren't the best ones, and therefore they relate that to every human they probably meet. What makes a big difference when it comes to the zoo is after they have had medical checkups, there's sometimes they have dental issues, there's sometimes they come in a lot of pains because of different health problems that they have. So before they're placed into quarantine, there's a full medical checkup that is done. It is determined what exactly was leading them to be what referred to as a problem jaguar out there, what is they're labeled at. And what we do is we make sure we get the best medical attention we can for them when they're introduced into a quarantine area for observation, after which they get accustomed to being around their prime keepers. They start taking food from the keeper. And then eventually when we can work with them of coming over for food whenever they're being called. And a lot of these guys, if you notice, they've had names that resemble or remind us where they come from or the reasons that landed them here in our program. So they relate their name to food and being called, and that's how we train them to go from point A to point B. And then after that, we do introduce them into a larger habitat area, which of course is a natural setting. We have ponds for them to go in if they need to, especially in the hot weather. We give them logs so they can, you know, do their pedicures, we call it podicures, and then we give them activities as to do like what they do in the wild. We do offer bones for them, and sometimes we give them treats that are hidden so they have to use their sense of smell. And they get adapted to being around their keeper and trusty keeper for a while first, but then when coming to other people they don't know, it is a thing. So slowly moving other people they don't know in and closer to them helps us with introducing them to the public, and also helps us for medical attention whenever we have vets over, they need to do checkups, we need to even sedate them. We do a lot of positive reinforcement, and that's one of the ways we can modify their behavior to help us better take care for them, especially whenever we need to give like any shots for like rabies or distemper for cats. We have been fortunate enough to be training most of our jaguars to volunteer. They line up on their specific areas on fences so that we can provide these medications for them. In long term, for most of these cats, unfortunately, because they come at an older age, that's usually the prime reason they end up going for easy prey items in animals that are enclosed or tied up, like dogs or even sheep. They are unfortunately unable to go back into the wild, and then we work forward to introducing them with larger crowds and get used to all the noise. When they know that they're in a safe space, we don't invade their spaces, we respect their spaces, they work better with us, and that's why people can enjoy seeing these cats up close without any of the cats being in high stress or high alert, because they know nobody's going to invade their area and they're safe. They're not in pain anymore. Food comes to them in abundance. So I've been very lucky to be part of what the zoo does in this particular program, and I'm grateful that I've been able to, I feel personally satisfied with being able to help a lot of these cats and, you know, make sure they live a long, healthy life here at the zoo.
From the ones I've seen, you're doing a great job with them. But I want to go back to two things you said really quick. When we are, have groups in the front part of the zoo, we often talk about things like the lineup, the rollover, the high five, Those are not just zoo tricks. They're actually very important for the health of the jaguar, correct?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Tell me a little bit more about that, because it's really interesting.
Yeah, with having cats doing rollover, or even initially, they will not do an entire rollover. You get to walk them through different training steps. You'd eventually get them on their back, so their paws up. And some of them take quite a long time to get a behavior in, and some of them take it in like within two training sessions, which is really great sometimes. But one of the reasons we have them do rollover is because a lot of times when cats are in the wild, they're constantly on the move. In other places, other zoos who are having closed weatherproof habitats because they're not found in native regions, they would suffer a lot from this. So there's a lot of bacterial built up on specific areas they picked as favorite resting spots, and they can be some skin issues that they can come up with, rashes. And the tummy area is one of the most sensitive areas on their coat. So being able to observe their underside with them doing it voluntarily gives us a very good view if their coats are healthy or if there's any problem that we need to deal with. Even if they have mites as well, which sometimes rarely happen here at the zoo, but we have had a couple cases, then we're able to give them proper treatments for that. And then if with the paws up, as cats get older, they don't have that energy to be moving around as much, so a lot of times they stop scratching their logs as often as they should. The claws can become overgrown and ingrown and sometimes infected, so we do have them train with either paws up or stand on the fence and hold onto the fence so that they're able to observe their claw. And in some cases we have been able to desensitize some of these cats, we're able to trim their claws without having actually to sedate them, just to specifically do the claw work. So that's two of the reasons why we do these things. Of course, guessing a cat rolling over, they look all cute and all. When you explain to them the reason why you actually do it, it's not just for show, it has a positive purpose for it, and it helps them take better care of them. So they're like, wow.
It's almost like a daily checkup on them, right?
To really
make sure they're doing well. That's really interesting. I don't think people often understand that's part of it that's going on. So one more quick question for you. What are some of the unique challenges. You know, these are big cats. I mean, these are the apex predators, third largest cat in the world, I believe, right? Okay, so there's got to be something, you know, besides their sheer size. Okay? I mean, they're cats, okay? Yes. And so if you had to, like, summarize, just tell me something, you know, like what you feel is a challenge, like you're always aware of when you're working with them.
Well, of course, like you said, you know, obvious size and strength of these guys. They're initially not used to being close to a presence of a human. And one is always you have to be on high alert. I mean, you know, you can never just go and say you want to walk into a habitat thinking that I remember I enclosed this cat in this separate area. I'm just going to walk. You got to make sure you check. You can see where the cat is. Mm-hmm. Not just check of not seeking, because they're very good at camouflaging. They're very good at hiding. So you always have to be on high alert with these cats. So I would say that was one of the things that always keeps me on my toes, making sure we know where the cat is, right?
I guess that's very important, I imagine. Important. If you don't know where the cat is, you could be in trouble.
Exactly.
So one more thing, okay, because I'm really interested in this. You have worked with a lot of these cats, okay? So tell me, like, one of the success stories that you're most proud of something you've worked on, like, with one of those jaguars, you know, like, something that stands out from you, like, this was really something we worked on, and I'm really proud that we got to this point with it.
they're quite a bit of accomplishment. I mean, we have Chickaboo, the jaguar, who was found orphaned in the wild. I'm not sure of the circumstances, but to some degree, we're glad that she was found and brought into the zoo, that we were actually able to hand raise her. It was quite an experience for me, since it was the first cat that was a cub working with her. So I got to learn a lot on diets when they're little, transitioning from, going from kitten milk into getting them into solid foods. It's a transition phase, since you cannot just transition from one to the next immediately. Seeing how they grow up and a lot of behavior changes that they go through. And now that she is out there, that people can see her and you relate the story to them, and you actually were part of this cub growing from such a little small, nice cub to the nice, beautiful, full-grown female jaguar that represents quite, would you say, a unique habitat or forest that we have in Belize with the Chickaboo Reserve. Right. You have like a link to educate people of on the wildlife there. I just feel so privileged when I say I have been part of this, you know. Even though she grew up with a little bit of not trusting me, because I was making sure she was always gaining weight, so I had to put her in a little box, get her on the scale, make sure she was eating her food. Sometimes gave her some of the supplements she needed in her food, and she did not like the taste, and she would be like staring at me like, why does this taste different? But I guess growing up, she has built a different trust with me. We're able to call her over anytime we need to. We work with her with meet and greet with different guests, so guests can have an up close experience with her, get to meet her, hear her story. And I'm glad to tell the guests that I have been part of that story of her being here at the zoo, which is really awesome.
You've done an amazing job with Chicky, one of my favorite jaguars here, and definitely one that has a very unique personality.
Yeah.
Yes, she very much is, and she's one you, I think you really have to keep your eyes on, because she does camouflage herself well, I think. So,
yes.
Well, thanks. Well, I'm going to move back to Jamal for a second, and I want to talk about the program that we are working on together, mm-hmm. Okay, which is the Habitats for Jags program. To start off, I'm just going to let you tell a little bit about how that come about and what that need is that we're looking at, okay, and what we're doing with that, and that's kind of filling at the end and what Inspired Adventures is doing. So,
sure.
Jamal,
mm-hmm. So, this is all like, it's great because it's natural evolution, and you know, how do we go to the next level? It's all positive growth that we see with these programs, and so the Habitats for Jags campaign is a good representation of that. It's taking all that great stuff that Jose just relayed to you about what happens behind the scenes when we get these jaguars, and you know, what I've talked about with the research they contribute to and so on, the capacity building for the people that care for them. It's like, okay, we're doing it already, obviously, but we need to take it to the next level, and what that requires at this point is dedicated facility. So we have the infrastructure for the animals themselves. They have, you know, they have their spaces there where they live and so on, but there's no real central or decentralized space or building where the jaguars are housed at the moment, where we can more effectively do these kind of checkups and demonstrations and just kind of pull the whole program together with these different jaguars, because they're all in separate spaces. You kind of have to get creative with how you move them around, or if they need to be brought into the main clinic, it's a bit more of an effort having to, you know, sedate them and take them off-site. Even if it's, you know, a couple hundred yards away, it's still off-site for them. And then they have to come back and recover. And, you know, it's not pleasant going through anesthesia and so on, even if it's in your best interest. We as humans know that. So what we're envisioning is, you know, a facility that is dedicated just to the jaguars, since we do have many of them in our care. And, you know, we see the need not going anywhere, as much as we're trying to offset through landscape programs and so on to reduce the need to be moving jaguars off from their wild areas to the zoo. We're always going to need a dedicated space for that. So this facility is something that, again, the animal care team has detailed. They've mapped out what the immediate needs are, and we've worked with Inspired Ventures to formulate it, to package it a bit more neatly to be able to present it to the public. And so what we're looking at is this building that, through, you know, very creative connections, literally tunnels and chutes and so on, can provide a system where the jaguars, much like Hossein described, can voluntarily come to these areas to be observed, to be checked, to be weighed, whatever else, rewarded for their participation, and then, you know, they can be guided back to their main living space without having to, again, physically remove them. Apart from that, it just gives the keepers an additional resource to be able to do things on site. So, you know, you'd have to be running back and forth between the main commissary and clinic to the human jaguar conflict program area. Here's a facility, here's, you know, your basic resources you need for that, materials, medicine, whatever it might be, in a central space that they can work out of. And then also it will enable us to be able to provide a better learning environment for not just our own staff, but the veterinary professionals we get coming through the zoo. We often get wildlife biology students that come and do a stint with us, learning some of the captive management we do with these animals coming in. So there's a lot of different groups that benefit from observing what the keepers do back there. But at the moment, they kind of have to just, you know, stand under a tree or stand in the shade and hope they don't stand in a bunch of red ants. There's no space that's set up to be like a teaching facility. So this is like a multi-purpose structure we're talking about, specific for the jaguars. And then, of course, it also will double like everything else. Once we build a new structure, we are mindful of the fact that we live in the neotropics, and we are very much in a hurricane prone region. So the holding areas, the facilities that the jaguars come into for their checkups and observation research, can also double as hurricane shelters for the jaguars. So, you know, as much as possible, we try to ensure that they all have spaces like this, but, you know, it's not always the case. So if we have a space that doubles as an emergency holding area for them, a recovery area, whatever it may be, then that's just one more, you know, it's another benefit to having this investing this effort into building this structure. So it'll help us with doing more with the jaguars in a more structured way, and probably going deeper into some of the activities that are already established.
I really want to thank both Jamal and Jose for their time today, and we're looking forward to having them back with us again very soon to learn some more stories about some of the graduate jaguars from this program. To learn more about our Habitats for Jags campaign and how you can help make a difference in the chances of survival for these magnificent animals, please visit our website or follow us on any of our social media channels. Also, check out our YouTube channel for videos on jaguar conservation and also some videos on some of the ambassador jaguars that we've been fortunate enough to meet at the zoo.